Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us this morning at sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're on for 3 hours this fine morning because there's just that much to cover here in the hockey world. Coming up in 15 minutes' time from ESPN, Scott Burnside will be joining us. Following Scott, coming up at 10:15 this morning from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Jeremy Rutherford will be joining us. And then to wrap up the guest tonight, or this morning, at 11:30 this morning, Craig Heisinger, general manager of your Manitoba Moose, will be joining us. Talk about the World Under-17 Hockey Challenge, a little bit of Moose talk, all sorts of things going on there. It is just a jam-packed time in the hockey world right now. That's why we're on for 3 hours. To Richard, to Ezra, to Michael Remus in the other desk, to Tim, operating the board here this morning, I say, hey now.
Hey now.
Hey now.
Boys, how are you this morning?
I actually got Ezzy and I coach hockey, and yesterday he brought the Best of Larry Sanders DVD.
Really?
I'm going to take a look at this over the next few weeks.
A big fan of Larry Sanders, which is where the origins of our Hey Now, which just came from. Very funny show. Very underrated. Because it was probably a little bit before, you know, the popular culture, really, the whole internet came a bit, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But if it was on nowadays, it would definitely be up there with Curb Your Enthusiasm, the shows that we consider the funniest shows on television.
Well, Drew, the thing is, I mean, most people would know that, I mean, Hey Now, I mean, Remus got me into Hey Now, but most people would know that from Howard Stern. I mean, if you're a fan of the Howard Stern radio show on Sirius, you know that for the real fans, you call in, you say Hey Now. But Larry Sanders, yeah, he was the first guy.
I didn't know that. It was from the show.
It wasn't actually Larry Sanders.
It was from the show. I mean, anyways, enough about Hey Now. If you want to Google Hey Now, I'm sure you can find out the origins of it on your own. Let's start with last night in the NHL. We'll do a recap of the games last night. We'll look ahead to the games tonight.
Lots of shootouts last night.
We'll discuss those momentarily. Start really what I consider the game of the night, and that was in Detroit. You know, two original six teams that simply don't play each other well often enough. And that's, of course, the Habs in Detroit against the Red Wings. Red Wings doubled up on them 4-2. But really, it was a very evenly matched game, 5-on-5. The Habs' Achilles heel last night came on the power play, a penalty kill, as Detroit did their damage on the power play. But, you know, if Detroit's the cream of the crop, Montreal proved that they can play with them.
Yeah, we're going to go over some stats later, Drew, that indicate that not only is Montreal, in a good place in net with Carey Price, but they're also playing well at even strength on a special team. So they're certainly not a one-man team.
There's a lot of good metrics if you're a Habs fan that you can point to and say this team has a good chance of doing something this year.
You know, you go into Detroit, it's a tough game. Why the game, you're going in there, you lose 4-2, you have a tough battle. And that's, when you're Montreal and you have a record like Montreal, maybe it's not a moral victory, but there's a lot to take from it.
It's not a hang your head in shame. We've got they didn't get run off the ice, and Detroit runs a lot of teams off the ice.
Sure do. Yeah.
So I mean,
especially at home.
So good on my. There was a buzz. Mm-hmm. The only thing I lament is that game wasn't on Saturday night.
I was going to say that. Yeah.
That's a Saturday night game, but whatever. It was on national television. That was good, I don't know. Those two teams have to play each other more often. I don't care about the balance and the unbalanced schedule. Just figure out a way to get those original six teams playing each other more often.
Get to Detroit back in the Eastern Conference where they should be.
Of course.
Is in the East, on the East Coast.
If you're in the Eastern time zone, you're in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah. And I think the only way we're going to see those teams play more than once or twice is if they meet in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Which is a shame.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. In going to Atlanta last night, Colorado doubled up on the Thrashers 4-2.
Matt Duchene with an impressive game there.
Yeah. Thomas Fleischman, goal and assist.
And maybe an important note for Habs fans, Adrian Dieter's reporting this morning that Milan Hayduk might be out for a little while. So they've been having some injury troubles there. That's not a good one.
No.
He scored a goal last night, too. I didn't see that.
And that was a red-hot Atlanta team that they beat.
In Atlanta.
Yeah. Not that home ice advantage means anything.
The Western Conference continues its dominance over the Eastern Conference, but...
Yeah.
That's because there's better teams in the Western Conference.
For the most part, yeah. Exactly.
Well, I mean, if you look at the East right now, it's really polarized in the Atlantic Division. Mm-hmm. You've got two amazing teams, and you've got three. Well, I mean, Rangers are good teams, but you've got two of the worst teams in the East, and then you've got three of the best teams in the East, right?
Speaking of some of the worst teams in the East, in Ottawa last night, Ottawa won 3-2 over New Jersey.
Marty Brodeur returned.
I mean, they were taking bad penalties at I've run out of words, Drew, to describe how I feel about the Devils now. I mean, they're 9-10 games under .500. I mean, if they finish last, is that a good thing maybe because they get a high draft pick?
In fact, I heard a rumor, Izzy, that you've chartered a flight down to New Jersey to throw waffles at them. No, and we'll, of course, discuss the waffle-throwing incident later
waffle
on
gate?
In the show. No, it's not
Low
a gate. I've already said it, enough gates. Not a gate. Just a waffle-throwing incident. On its own... Somebody throwing a waffle at a hockey game on the ice and hitting a player is a good enough story.
That's
you don't need to make it a gate.
It's a gate, Drew.
Was it an EGA?
I don't know. Who gets a... How do you get a waffle at a... We'll talk about the waffle
later. Did someone toast the waffles before they put them on the ice? Like, were they pre-toasted or were they frozen?
Was it a preemptive... I don't know. Like, did they know that the Leafs were going to stink it up so badly that they had to bring waffles? I mean, it's a safe bet.
Yeah.
That they're going to be bad.
Was there syrup on the waffles?
These are all important questions.
I heard just butter.
I heard a rumor... Rumor, keep in mind, there were two people throwing waffles.
Oh. Yeah.
There was a second waffler.
Yeah.
Back and to the left. Going to Dallas. Dallas last night. Dallas took care of business on home ice. They beat the Carolina Hurricanes 2-1 in a shootout.
We lost to say about Dallas. Ezzy's just going to talk about Dallas later in the show. And as you guys well know, I'm a fairly big Dallas fan. Talked them up quite a bit before the season and have been happy with their performance so far.
Right now, I mean, Brad Richards, I mean, if they can find some way to keep Brad Richards, I mean, they should do it. Because right now, with the exception of maybe Stamkos, Crosby, and a few other players, he's the best player in the league right now.
He's actually been that good. I mean, and he was 90-plus points last year. Nobody talks about him because
he plays in anonymity.
Which never used to be the case, but obviously Dallas has kind of fallen by the wayside in terms of NHL spotlight.
Yeah. But, if they regain it, then the fans will come back there.
I think so.
It's just, it's a fair weather market, but that's okay.
Most
southern U.S. markets are.
Yeah.
In Edmonton last night, the Oilers knocked off the Tampa Bay Lightning in a shootout 4-3.
The story of the night there.
Yes.
Omark gate.
Not everything isn't a gate. Not a gate. Anyways, Linus Omark.
Yes.
You want to? You guys saw it. I haven't had a chance to pull up the video.
Linus Omark is a draft pick of the Oilers. Who is known for his YouTube prowess with some crazy goals, fadeaway flicks of the shot, and he's got very, very, very good hands. He's a smallish player, good skater. He's a left-handed shooter, and it's his first game up with the first game up with the big club. He got called up from the AHL where he was at a point of game pace, scored 5 goals in one game, and apparently scored a very nice goal last week.
Beautiful. I was there at the Oklahoma City game. It was just a dynamite.
It was actually quite
dynamite goal.
Quite upset when he was cut, and then he was he got called up. Him and Ryan O'Meara, Ryan O'Meara part of the Ryan Smith deal way back when, who hasn't really turned out. And Omark had the shootout winner, but that wasn't the story as much as Omark took the puck at center ice on the shootout and did a spinorama. Like, he basically picked up the puck and did a spinorama as he picked up the puck, then went in and scored. And so the Tampa Bay Lightning were furious, saying that's you're showing us up. It's a lack of respect for the game. What are you doing? It's unnecessary. Dan Ellis, who got scored on, was very mad about it. Matthias Olin was very mad about it. It's been the talk of hockey since last night.
Yeah. And the
Twitter
thing is,
Twitter actually exploded, I believe, for a couple minutes there talking about it.
And boys, the thing about the goal is, I think it's great for fans. A lot of people, Edmonton obviously won the game, but I think the reason we were talking about this early this morning before we came on air, and the reason why I didn't like the goal is because. It proved the fact that if you haven't seen the goal just before
go to illegalcurve.com and
Remus
in the Cover It Live chat has it up there. The video is up there, so go to illegalcurve.com and you can find it right there. Just go to illegalcurve.com and you can find it right there.
Pony TSN, that's where I watch it, but we'll get on Illegal Curve. Don't give me a hard time, guys. Just chill. But the reason why I didn't like it is because he could have easily not scored. And then if he doesn't score,
good point.
Do you say? If he does a spin around and doesn't score, you look like
great
a clown,
point.
Like I usually look on the radio.
It's amazing how he can look like something on a radio.
But exactly. That's a great point, Ezzy. And I mean, what if he does miss? And the truth is, he kind of found him the shot. It went in anyways. But what if he does miss? He's the biggest joke out there.
I'm going to talk about this later. I want to talk about shootouts, and I will talk about shootouts later. But that's an example of why the shootout is ridiculous.
You have guys doing
spinoramas at center ice.
True.
This isn't the Shriner Circus.
I'm not even sure what that has to do with anything. But, you know, to me, you know, it's already a fake portion of the game. It's a manufactured for the fans portion of the game, the shootout. So let the guy do razzle-dazzle. I mean, and if he thinks that he's good enough to do it, he'll have to pay for it later on the next time these two teams play each other. And people around the NHL took note of him. They'll probably put a target on him.
I think the truth is, Drew, people want to see the flair. But the problem is that the shootouts turned into somewhat like overtime. You don't want to lose. So how many times in the shootout, guys, do we see crazy moves?
Not very often.
Because players don't want to lose. They only want to win. Give Omar credit for, you know, in some point, he's got the balls to go and make that move. But the truth is, guys, what do I care about a move at center ice? Make a crazy move on the goaltender. Make it interesting. It's not a highlight that you can do a spin around and pick up the puck. I mean, Ezzy and I coach 14-year-olds. They can do that.
Richie, unless you're Pavel Datsyuk, Ryan Getzlaf, or a player that has a lot of confidence in his moves. I'm not saying Linus Omark doesn't.
He does.
He almost tripped. If you watch the video of it, and I mean, like I said, illegalcurve.com, check out the video.
Should Linus Omark be on Battle of the Blades? Like,
he almost tripped after he did the shootout, after he did a... Look, you know, anybody can do a spin, like you said, when there's nobody around them in the middle of the ice to pick up a puck. It's not that big of a deal. But if he had tripped, it would be a way bigger deal.
The spinorama was completely unnecessary. It doesn't give you more speed or anything.
No, it's just for show.
The truth is I actually really, really like Ezzy's point there. At the beginning, I thought it was a little bit of a sign of disrespect, but I didn't care that much. By the end of the day, I actually like it, because if he misses, he's the biggest joke out there. So let him do it.
He goes right back down to the AHL if he misses there.
Well, and he hears about it for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Final game last night, Calgary lost in a shootout to Anaheim 3-2.
Ben Sutter wasn't unhappy with the way this team played. They battled back. They were down 2-0 in the third period. Jokinen scored, and Ginla scored. Anaheim came out with a shootout. By the way, just quickly on Anaheim's note, it's the third game in a row that they've blown a 2-goal lead.
Yeah, well, Calgary's which is not surprising given their defensive troubles.
And Calgary's now last place in the West, by the way.
Busy night in the NHL tonight, but an interesting one in that there's only two games involving Canadian teams, which is rare for a Saturday night. Montreal plays at Toronto.
In 3D.
In 3D.
Except for Don Cherry.
Except for Don Cherry, thank
God. So it'll be like waffles are thrown at your plate?
You get to actually eat the waffles that they throw on the ice. It's fabulous technology, let me tell you.
Drew, what do you put on your waffles?
Syrup. Not a fan of the people who do ice cream.
What's the late game?
The late game is Tampa Bay at Vancouver.
But both good games.
Yeah, they're both entertaining games. Good. I mean, and then there's, of course, a ton of other games in the hockey world. And, you know, check your local listings for start times. Anyways, let's leave it there. When we come back from ESPN, Scott Burnside will be joining us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. To the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 9:15, Saturday morning. We spent our first segment discussing last night in the NHL and looking a bit forward towards tonight in the NHL. And now we're pleased to be joined on the line by Scott Burnside of ESPN. Scott Burnside, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Well, thank you for having me. How are things in Winnipeg this?
Nice and cold.
It's about minus 40 right now in Winnipeg.
Good hockey weather.
I won't complain too much about the weather here in Atlanta, but it's pretty chilly here, too.
Well, it's probably best, though, we not compare. Scott, let's start with the lease agreement that was released late last night between, you know, Matthew Hulsizer and the city of Glendale. And, you know, wouldn't anybody buy the Coyotes under those terms of agreement? You pretty much guaranteed not to. You have your losses covered for the next, you know, 10 years or so.
It is a nice looking deal, and you're right. If you and your buddies and a couple neighbors got together, you might want to buy the team too, given those terms. And it'll be interesting on I think it's Tuesday night when the lease is voted on at City Council in Glendale. But you know, I saw a couple comments from maybe some councilors who don't like the idea. But you know, I mean, they have painted themselves into a very, very tiny corner. And you know, frankly, I'm not at all surprised, you know, sort of maybe the fine details of this are a bit surprising in terms of just how much the city is going to give back to Mr. Hulsizer. But, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. Anyone who's going to buy that team was looking for those kinds of concessions, essentially to guarantee guarantee is a relative term, I suppose, but the future of that team for the foreseeable future in Glendale, and that looks like what this deal will accomplish.
Scott, why budge for Hulsizer here and not, you know, for Reinsdorf previously?
I'm not sure, and I don't know whether it was a sense of, you know, the city of Glendale maybe thinking could have their cake and eat it too, have someone buy the team and keep it there and maybe not have to give back, maybe, you know, sort of the sticker shock of dealing with Reinsdorf and maybe his people in Glendale. I'm only sort of speculating on what might have happened with the city pulling out and then sort of going in the back door and begging Ice Edge to come back to the table last spring. But, you know, you're right. In the end, they give away a lot, just as, you know, Reinsdorf was asking a lot, Ice Edge was asking a lot, and ultimately Hulsizer asked for and presumably will get a lot. That's the reality of the situation in Glendale and what they had to do to keep the team there.
Scott, you wrote a blog post on your Crosschecks blog on ESPN.com about, you know, relocation and the fact that, I mean, you don't think it'll happen under the Bettman regime, and it hasn't happened in 14 years, and you know, things along those lines. I have a question for you in terms of not so much that thought process, but if you're Gary Bettman, maybe from that perspective, if you're Gary Bettman and you have two billionaires in Canada, one being David Thompson, one being Jim Balsillie, you know, not even talking about Quebec City, but just those two billionaires wanting to buy into this club, like not, you know, not multimillionaires, but David Thompson, like the 23rd richest man in the world according to Forbes, and then obviously Balsillie with his with RIM and everything that he owns. Why wouldn't you want those guys in a fraternity that seems to be bleeding money?
Well, you know, I think there is a misconception that the Gary Bettman doesn't want them in the club. Now, I think, you know, obviously with Balsillie, he didn't want him in the club, but Jim Balsillie is a victim of his own flawed strategy. At the Board of Governors this week in Florida, a bunch of the writers sitting around talking, and, you know, I don't know whether Matthew Hulsizer stacks up net worth compared to Jim Balsillie, but he is, you know, in his attitude and how he's gone about it, he's the anti-Balsillie. And David Thompson is in some ways the anti-Balsillie too, where we have someone who's passionate about the game, they have deep pockets, they understand the idea of owning a team doesn't necessarily translate into instant profits, and in fact, it's never turned into profits. But if you're, you know, you have a small group of people who are willing to take that risk and to risk some of their accumulated net worth to be part of this club, so I don't think it's that Gary Bettman doesn't want them in the club. I think Jim Balsillie essentially shot himself in the foot with his strategy of trying to strong arm his way, A, into the club, and then, B, into being able to do whatever he wanted to do with first the Pittsburgh Penguins, then the Nashville Predators, and finally with the Phoenix Coyotes. You know, David Thompson is taking a different strategy. It's a strategy of patience and waiting. Matthew Hulsizer arrived, you know, late in the going, but, you know, again, is apparently willing to take a couple of kicks in the shins to keep that team in Phoenix and keep it there long term. I guess the issue for David Thompson, whether the ownership group in Quebec City turns out to be real and if there is an arena somewhere down the road, is at what point and what are the circumstances that would see an existing team fold its tent south of the border and then move to Winnipeg or to Quebec City? And I think that, you know, that was sort of the point of my blog. I just don't see that happening anytime soon, given the NHL's history and their determination not to see teams relocate.
And you know, that point's well taken, Scott. At the same time, though, if he does want, you know, maybe of, you know, of interest, if Gary does want, you know, those two guys in the fraternity, is the NHL, I mean, was there any whispers at all about expansion over the Board of Governors meetings?
No. I mean, there was absolutely no discussion of that. I think that will be an interesting point in the next round of negotiations with the collective bargaining agreement. Because certainly the players, who, you know, if they truly are partners with the league, will want to exercise their right to a portion of expansion fees, something that's never happened in the past. So, you know, whether the NHL is, you know, will they try and rush into expansion to cut the players out of, you know, whatever portion of an expansion fee they might have? I don't see it, because I think the league is, you know, there are franchises that are in trouble and in uncertain territory, whether it's Dallas Stars or the Atlanta Thrashers here, you know, the New York Islanders, what will happen when that lease expires, and I think it's 2015, Charles Wang, you know, needs a new arena for that franchise to survive. So I don't see them expanding, even though I think it's attractive to a lot of owners, because it is, it's just, it's found money.
Right.
And frankly, if it goes to an expansion, I would be shocked if the expansion isn't into Southern Ontario, where I think you could maximize your expansion fees. Mm-hmm. You know, with someone going willing to pay $300 million or whatever it might be to put a team in Southern Ontario, even with resistance from Toronto and Buffalo, I think that might be where the biggest windfall would be for the league in terms of expansion fees.
Scott, something else that you blogged about on Tuesday was, you know, the NHL's television contract. Upcoming contract, and the current one is expiring. Do you think ESPN is going to be involved in the next television deal?
It's one of those things. It, oddly enough, no one from Bristol ever calls me and asks me what I think about whether it would be good to get hockey back on ESPN. It, you know, we're sort of in that. I will say this, that I think there is an appetite for it at ESPN. And again, I'm speaking only as a guy who works there and covers hockey. And mm-hmm. But, you know, it's, again, Gary Bettman's point is, I think, is a fair one. When he talks about the attractiveness of the NHL now compared to coming out of the lockout, you don't know what's going to happen with the NBC-Comcast merger. Are they going to make a play to become a real sort of cable sports player? You've got to look at what the other major sports in the NBA and football looking at possible work stoppages. The NHL is an attractive property. The game itself is attractive. We see the Winter Classic and the playoff ratings, those kinds of things. So, you know, I'm dodging a bit here. I mean, frankly, you know, in a completely selfish way, of course, it'd be great mm-hmm. to see hockey back on ESPN. I think if you talk to players and GMs and anyone connected to the game, especially in the States, the feeling is the profile of the game will go up dramatically yep. if it was back on the network. But it has to be something that works out for the NHL, too, and they have to feel that they're getting, you know, the thing about Versus, when you think about the coverage, especially in the playoffs, one, sometimes two games a night, every night through the playoffs, it's a pretty dynamic thing. And I think the NHL, you know, for all the kicks it took with that deal with Versus, boy, they've got pretty good coverage from it. And you know, Gary was talking about that this week, and I think it's fair. I'm not sure anywhere else would have provided the kind of coverage that they have had from Versus. And now it'll be interesting to see, okay, well, what kind of competition for that property will there be as these contracts run out?
It's pretty hard to ignore the fact that ESPN did a great job covering hockey and that they reach so many more million people, right?
Well, I haven't seen the numbers. I think there is actually, you know, with the penetration in terms of that number of households that Versus reaches, certainly has improved and continues to improve. I think, you know, the NHL is in a nice spot, I think, compared to coming out of the lockout when they went yep. essentially hat mm-hmm. in hand trying to find some place to, you know, put their games on television in the States. So I think that, you know, that it is a much different dynamic, and I think it's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out, you know, over the next 6 or 7 months.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Scott Burnside of ESPN. Now, Scott, in a comprehensive series or feature that yourself and your colleague Pierre LeBrun did just yesterday about concussions, you spent a fair bit of time with Mark Savard. You know, and you know, we've heard about he's now sort of become the poster boy for, you know, the headshot issue in the NHL and everything along those lines. And he was very honest with you about the, you know, the side effects or, you know, the complications he's had from his concussion. How seriously do you think Savard fears the ramifications? What his life could become if he gets another concussion in the course of game action in the NHL?
Well, I think like anybody who comes back from a serious injury like that, whether it's like David Booth or Mark Savard, or we saw Eric Lindros as his career wound down. I mean, the reality is that the more of these kinds of injuries you have, and especially serious ones like the one Mark Savard suffered, it doesn't take all that much to bring those symptoms back. So I think it's part of everyday life for Mark Savard now. I thought what was fascinating was Mark Savard, talking even briefly when he first came back and talking about post-concussion syndrome and the depression that he suffered last summer as a result of the concussion itself. And talking to Peter Chiarelli, the Bruins GM, he said as soon as Mark made those comments, he was contacted by a number of GMs in the NHL saying, wow, how did you guys handle this? What was your treatment plan? How did you go about this? Because they had players who had various levels of concussions and had suffered some sort of post-concussion depression as well as a result of that as well. So I thought it was fascinating that those were the kinds of, martial arts not alone, and it is something that happens to probably a lot more players in the NHL than we're aware of, because it's something that people don't want to talk about.
Scott, moving away from maybe a more serious topic like that into profile of the league, there was a short portion of this, HBO series 24/7, which covers the Penguins and the Capos, shown to the Board of Governors. Apparently, it was very well received. Can you talk a little bit about this series in terms of the NHL's thought process behind it, and also maybe as a part B to that question, if the NHL is maybe looking to do this on an annual basis?
Well, I'm pumped to see the first episode on Wednesday night, and I was talking to some colleagues of mine in Pittsburgh, and actually had a chance to talk to Sidney Crosby about a week or a week and a half ago, and we were talking about how well he's playing, but we ended up chatting a bit about the cameras and having the HBO guys around, and it's fascinating, and again, it's different than the NFL Hard Knocks series, which of course with the Jets and Rex Ryan, cultivated a cult following this past fall, and that's training camp, so the dynamic's different. To have that kind of access during the regular season is, I think, a bit unprecedented for pro sport. You never know how it's going to translate for the casual hockey audience. Sometimes hockey players are a little bit boring. I don't know whether it's the fear, but you spend a lot of time with those guys, and you think, oh boy, how's that going to play out for an hour? But the people I've talked to who've been around and have a sense of what the product is going to look like, they're wildly excited about it. And maybe it's a little bit like the Winter Classic. I remember being at the first one in Buffalo, going, is this going to be a huge disaster, or what's it going to be like? And of course, 4 years later, it is. It has been a wild success for the NHL in terms of its profile and attracting casual fans and opening a door to people who might not otherwise have seen or had been interested in the game. And I think it's not a big stretch to think that this HBO miniseries could do the same kind of thing. And to your question about, could we see this every year? Maybe every year would it spoil it? I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see how the product's received, and then B, how do you capitalize on it? How do you make it sort of grow and make it work for you? So a lot of unknowns going forward, but everything I've heard, people are thrilled with what's going to be on the air in the next few weeks. So I'm excited to see for myself as well.
Scott, so far this year, we really haven't seen a blockbuster trade, unless you consider the Thomas Fleischmann to Colorado trade a blockbuster trade. But who do you think is going to, drop their shoes the first and make a big deal?
Well, it's interesting. And as it's such a cliche now that it's almost impossible to have a hockey trade. And, the Avs have been, relative standards, have been extremely busy with their dealings this year. But, I don't see anything, frankly, until we get well into January, maybe even the first part of February, when you can see the trade deadline in sight. And then you can start to say, prorated contract, can I take on could I take a $4 or $5 million guy? I think, you'll have to look at teams like Pittsburgh. Ray Shero has been consistently busy at the trade deadline in trying to find pieces. He's hit the jackpot with Marian Hossa and then with Bill Guerin and Chris Kunitz, and came up empty with Alexi Ponikarovsky. But he will be active, I would think. The Kings will be active. You look at the situation with Brad Richards in Dallas. What a dilemma for Joe Neuwendijk there. Stars continue to be in the midst of a playoff spot. Do they keep Brad Richards, knowing full well that he is likely to walk July 1st, or do they, I can't think of anyone else who will be available or made available that will have the potential impact that he will have. So, he's a guy that could realistically be, you could get a prospect, the first round pick, those kinds of things. So, I'm curious about the whole Alexei Kovalev thing in Ottawa. Big ticket. And again, no one's going to bite on that at least until much closer to the trade deadline. But it's also a guy with playoff numbers that are very impressive. He's won a Stanley Cup. So, I'm not sure there is a team that you can look at, but there are, the Kings and Penguins, I think for sure will be active. They just traditionally, Dean Lombardi didn't go the Kovalchuk route. He's got cap space. He needs help offensively. So he will be in the market for some sort of impact forward. There are probably 10 or 15 teams looking for defensive depth, puck-moving defensemen, blah, blah, blah. So it'll be, again, Thomas Cabrelle. What's the situation with his no trade? And can Brian Burke finally move him? You keep wondering whether he will ultimately end up in Boston. We had rumors a couple of years ago at the draft that he was going there, and it never happened. The Bruins could sure use him and maybe pull themselves up into the same bracket as Pittsburgh, Washington, and Philadelphia in the East. So it'll be interesting.
Scott Burnside of ESPN, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Legal Curve Hockey Show.
Anytime, guys.
Take care, Scott. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about those Pittsburgh Penguins and Sidney Crosby. He's just tearing it up. Words defy me about how well Sidney Crosby's been playing. We'll talk about the Scott Burnside interview. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning. We just heard from Scott Burnside. Still to come today, Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and Manitoba Moose General Manager Craig Heisinger. If you want to get in on the conversation, go to our Twitter page, at Illegal Curve. You can send us your thoughts, your comments, whatever, your tweets, your thoughts and comments in 160 characters or less. At Illegal Curve is where you can tweet us. Join the Cover It Live chat at www.illegalcurve.com. We have all the latest links and video and stories and everything in the hockey world there. That's a good spot to talk hockey with some of your favorite hockey hockey fans like yourself out there.
And get on there, because Remus is getting lonely in there. You need somebody to chat to. It's difficult when you're just chatting with yourself. I would know.
That's odd. Let's move on to the Pittsburgh Penguins and Sidney Crosby. Like I said before the break, really, I can speak in hyperbole all I want, but just watch Sidney Crosby play hockey right now, and he's playing a game that nobody else in the NHL is playing. The Penguins are 12-0-1 since their last regulation loss on November 10th, second longest winning streak in franchise history. Crosby has 35 points during a 17-game scoring streak, 20 goals, 15 assists. He's just an unbelievable player right now, and we should be privileged to say that we're able to watch him. And this isn't even his prime yet.
Mm. Well, I mean,
how old is he, Drew?
Well,
he's not even 24 yet. It's amazing. Yeah. He's been in the league now for 6 years.
Isn't your prime 27, 28?
I think that's actually been disproven by the numbers.
Gretzky had his great years between 22 and 25, 26,
I think
right?
The peak years are 23 to 26.
Okay, so right fine. He might be in his prime right now, but it's not like
a scientific thing too, Richie. I mean,
the numbers bear that out, apparently.
Oh, is it? It is scientific. Science is great. But I think you nailed it on the head there, Drew, about watching him and it being a privilege. I mean, me and Richie, I think we're talking about this on Wednesday night. And, Drew, you were also there. But
you guys didn't save it for the show?
I think you were distracted. You were getting ready for UFC 124 but on TSN. But
it's not on TSN.
No, but they were previewing it. Anyways, just let me say something here. I'm not saying that Sidney Crosby is as I personally believe Wayne Gretzky. Nobody's ever going to duplicate Wayne Gretzky. I think he was a once-in-a-lifetime thing. But what we're seeing now, I think, is the closest thing we've seen since a Wayne Gretzky, Mario Lemieux individual performance right now. He's been playing with Chris Kunitz and Pascal Dupuis. I'm just saying. I think the type of performance he's putting on right now hasn't been seen since the Gretzky and Lemieux years.
I would agree
with that.
That
type of dominance, individual. I don't even think Ovechkin has done anything like what Crosby's doing right now.
I think you'd probably throw Jaromir Jagr in the bottom half of that conversation just because he dominated for so long. He did dominate for so long, Izzy, but I understand what you're saying. This is my issue, though, a couple of things. I'm as big of a Sidney Crosby fan as you're going to find out there. We've been saying on the show for almost 2 years now that he's a better player than Alexander Ovechkin. Having said that...
arguably?
Having said that, in all honesty, guys, I think people have to take a step back. Sidney Crosby's had an amazing streak here. 17 games, whatever, 35 points, whatever, the exact numbers. 17 games is not a career make, and people who compare this stretch and then start comparing him to Wayne Gretzky need to take a step back, and I really don't like that, guys.
I hate comparisons.
A couple of things. First of all, I don't mind comparisons.
I just said I'm not comparing him.
Michael Grange, a writer I really respect, talking about Crosby's numbers maybe exceeding Wayne Gretzky. Let's just take a step back, guys. It's been less than half of the season, and Crosby's a great player, and what people do is they compare you know, the goal scoring era to the fact there's far less goals now, and then, you know, taking the less scoring into account, his numbers look even better, which they do. But I think what has to be taken into account also is the fact that Wayne Gretzky won scoring championships by 50 or 60 points. So the percentage of the gap percentage of his excellence over everybody else's in his era was so otherworldly that I think that, you know, Crosby's a brilliant player, but I think he's got 10 more points than the next guy in the NHL right now. It probably won't, you know, he won't get that much better than 10, 15 points better than the next guy. I realize now with less scoring, obviously the gap's going to shrink, but let's just take it down a notch. And I love Sidney Crosby. His streak right now, he's the best player to watch in the NHL. He can shoot, he can pass, he's worked on his slap shot, he's worked on his one-timer, worked on his wrist shot, his face-offs, he's a complete player, he can go on the boards, he can do it all. He's the best player in the NHL right now, hands down. But let's not get carried away by calling him Wayne Gretzky or even Mario Lemieux.
Why
right
do
now
we have to compare him to guys who played in a different era when the game was different, when everything about the NHL was different when Gretzky and Lemieux played versus when Crosby's playing right now?
Just
why do we have to compare him? Why can't we appreciate what he's doing in his time for what it is?
We can do both. We can do both, I think. Yeah, Drew, I think...
He's not as good as Gretzky, or he's better than Gretzky.
That's an
who cares? They're both great players.
That's an exciting conversation. I like the conversation. But
you're right,
I think
Drew.
That,
you're right.
But at 23 right years old, guys, I mean, you're comparing somebody...
to a living legend.
You're comparing it to somebody who scored 92 goals, who had 200 points more than once. Nobody's ever had 200 points before. Who has more goals than anybody else. Who has more assists than anybody has points. Like, let's take it easy.
I don't need to compare him. I don't think we need to compare the two.
But
we
need to appreciate Sidney
Crosby for what he's doing game in and game out. He is the best player. He's doing it with really mediocre line mates.
Chris Kunitz is not mediocre.
Yes, he is.
They're mediocre players. Anywhere else, they're mediocre players. That wouldn't be... I mean, they're along for the ride. I mean, Crosby is light years ahead of everybody else in the NHL right now. I don't care what he's compared to Wayne Gretzky and Lemieux. Doesn't matter to me. I sit down, I turn on the TV, I see the Penguins playing, I watch Crosby, and I say, damn, he's a good player, and I don't care about anything else.
Sure, you're right. But, I mean, you know this... because you follow a lot of sports. You follow baseball, you follow basketball. Comparisons just happen. But
I don't like it, though.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not agreeing. Richie's agreeing with you, too.
I compare you to my other friends.
Well, and I assume that I'm head and I'm Gretzky in the prime.
No, I actually,
compared to your other
Drew,
friends.
I actually compare you to
I've
Wayne Gretzky.
I've met your other friends. They're not that good.
Drew, I compare you to Wayne Gretzky. I'm like, wow, hanging out with Drew tonight is going to be like when Wayne Gretzky scored 92 goals in 1 year. It's going to be that kind
but
of
Drew,
a night.
But, Drew, were your peak years 23 or 26?
Well, I'm 29 now, and it's obviously that I'm on the downside.
So
I mean,
on,
yeah, my
so
hair,
on,
I'm losing
this,
my hair,
so
it's
Drew
going gray.
Drew right
it's
now,
all, sorts,
like,
it's all
is,
sorts of
is
things.
Is Drew right now like when Gretzky went to the St. Louis Blues, like,
yeah,
and then he's going to go to the Rangers, and then...
You know, it was all they were almost complimenting me for a couple seconds there, but they couldn't keep it going through the break. They just said, okay, we boosted him up now. We have to knock him down a couple notches.
We love you, Drew. That's why we do it.
That's what the friendship's all about here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm going to go home and cry after the show.
New segment coming up.
That's right. Statistically speaking, after the break, we'll break down some numbers that you might not know of in the NHL. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Saturday morning, I'm sure you're out and about in the car, you know, running your holiday errands, you're getting your Christmas shopping done. If you're doing that, be sure to stop by the Christmas Miracle taking place at St. Vitale Center, the food hall at St. Vitale Center. Bring a new unwrapped toy for the Christmas cheer board. You know, cash is always appreciated. Everybody always loves cash. You know, it's the time of the season where, you know, give back to those a little bit less fortunate. It's very important that you go ahead and do that. And, you know, for those of you that give the really good gifts, we'll even throw in a date with Richard Pollock. How's that for an offer? That should really drive up the Christmas gifts today. You know, the three Jews involved in the Legal Curve Hockey Show really recommend, the four Jews involved really recommend that you drop off your gifts to the Christmas cheer board today.
Vast Christmas party experience.
I know you do. In fact, you're wearing an ugly Christmas sweater tonight. I thought that was very good of you. Yeah,
it's funny. I liked that sweater a lot.
I like that. At curling last night, which of course I'm now going to be made fun of. It was ugly.
Let me stop you right there. I called Drew yesterday to tell him about another guest we booked. We have three guests today. Tell him about Jeremy Rutherford, who we have on in about 30 minutes or so. So Drew goes, I can't answer it. I'm curling. I go, Drew, there's eight rocks for one, six rocks, eight in
rocks.
End. So 16 rocks in end. You're throwing two of those rocks. You can't make a phone call?
I was skipping the team. It's all part of the strategy.
You're the skip?
That should tell you all you need to know about my curling team.
His nickname as a youngster on his house league team was Skippy.
It's true, because I had glasses. I looked like Skippy from Family Ties, apparently.
Drew, can you also confirm that once on a breakaway when you were a young child, you couldn't raise the puck? So I heard the story last night.
No, Drew,
how did you just hear the story last night?
You were on, remember when we were at your house? You were on Goals for Kids. If you don't know this,
it's true.
At Jets games, the Winnipeg Jets were a team that used to exist in Winnipeg.
Thanks
they used
for that,
to have first intermission contest where
I can tell the story if you
three
like.
Minor hockey league children
wrong
boys.
Immediately.
What?
Three children. You're right about that.
Oh. Would take breakaways from different teams.
Yes.
And Drew was one of the kids once, and you showed us you have it on VHS.
You couldn't raise it though.
Well, Richard,
so he laid down.
Well, that was in a practice, first of all. It wasn't in the game. It was in a practice, and the goalie, decided to point out for the entire team.
This is last week?
This is not last week, thank you. And as you asked your point about the goals for kids, it was true. That was my second time ever on skates. It was in the first intermission.
You scored, didn't you?
I did not score. I couldn't skate. I was literally walking on the ice. And it was in Wayne Gretzky's first game back in Winnipeg since being traded to Los Angeles.
Right.
The crowd was going crazy for me, let me tell you. Mocking me immensely.
Can we please get that up?
Which.
We need to get that up on a legal curve.
It's been burnt onto DVD. So Remus just gave the thumbs up. So Remus will post that on the website
classic.
At some point.
Tim wants to see little Drew.
We'll be sure
how old were you, Drew, when that happened?
21.
Seven?
Wow.
Seven, I think.
It's like 30 years ago.
22 years ago.
Statistically speaking, let's go.
Statistically speaking, I'm old, apparently. Montreal is third in 5-on-5 goal-scoring ratio. Richie, you're the one who really came up with most of these stats. Let's break it down.
Quickly, the goal-scoring ratio, you go to the NHL side, they have some nice stats there. Goal-scoring ratio means, goals at even strength, which is important here. So goals for divided by goals against in series ratio is 5-on-5 is very predictive in terms of team success. The Habs have generally been a team that relies heavily on special teams and not so much on even strength. But this year it's different. Third in the NHL in the even strength ratio. Something that they can sustain moving forward bodes well for this team's chances.
I bet you that's an interesting stat. I mean, like you alluded to it there, but I bet you can really see who the good teams are, consistently good teams, the top echelon teams in the NHL,
Detroit,
can be examined through that stat.
Best teams in the NHL at the end of the season, most often are in the top 5 or 10 there.
Because there's no gimmicks there. It's, look, you got your five guys on the ice versus our five guys. Our five guys are going to beat your five guys night in, night out, and going to put the puck in the net.
And two teams that obviously come to mind, Drew, are Detroit and New Jersey. Two teams that haven't had necessarily bad power plays, but always good teams, even
San
strength.
San Jose.
And San Jose, yeah. And I know, Rich, you got more stats there.
Yep.
Montreal, just quickly, I mean, we talked about this last year and even the year before when we did the podcast. Montreal needs Markov there. And that's why PK Subban, we'll talk about this as well later. We have a lot to talk about, obviously.
That's why we're
on
for 3 hours tonight.
PK Subban is useful on the power play. He hasn't necessarily lit it up this year, but that's why a lot of fans in Montreal were upset that he was in the press box for three games because he's very good on the power play.
Let's stay with Montreal with their stats. They're 13th. They're only 13th in power play. And you said, Richard, this is a team that used to rely heavily on the power play to generate their offense. But they're first in the NHL in penalty killing.
Yeah. Scheme is a factor there, Drew. I think some people have to understand this. The Leafs have been terrible in the penalty killing for years now. And Ron Wilson needs to bear some of that responsibility because as much as the Habs have been, the Habs are top in the PK again, a fair amount of the Habs players over the course of the past few seasons have changed. The Habs have been pretty solid on special teams. So Kirk Muller is one of the masterminds of the penalty kill and power play there. And Jacques Martin obviously is a good preventative coach in terms of preventing opposition goals and scheming defensively. The Leafs, as weak as the Leafs are on the penalty kill, the Habs are just as strong. And I think, Carey Price obviously is responsible for this, but I think the scheme needs to get more attention.
Now, more praise.
In terms of the offense, in terms of the power play, Subban missing three games is a factor, but they replaced him with Yannick Weber, who's a pretty solid offensive player. And while Markov's loss, as he for sure, definitely is a factor in them being 13th, because they'd probably be higher if not for that, guys like Camilleri and guys, who are pretty successful power play players, have allowed that team to still be above average in the National Hockey League power play ratio.
If you're third in 5-on-5 goal scoring ratio,
exactly,
and you're first in penalty killing, you can be 13th in power play efficiency.
And that's why the Habs are doing so well this year. I mean, whereas a lot of people thought they were going to take a step back, they've actually improved.
Absolutely. Those are the metrics. Right now. Those metrics are a sign of a good team that's in it for the long haul.
Now, why don't we go in the opposite end there?
Exactly.
Power play success and now power play failure. Just abysmal numbers in Florida, Drew.
Yeah.
The Florida Panthers' power play success rate through 27 games this season is 8.4%. Unsustainably bad.
Which is also the unemployment rate in the U.S., by the way.
You might be right about that. And, you know, you look at the Florida team.
I have no idea.
You look at the parts guys there, and you see you have Stephen Weiss, you have David Booth, you have Michael Frolik, guys who really haven't played that well this year. They've had their spurts, but haven't played that great. You know, Brian McCabe back there, you know, in terms of power play offense, a guy like Kulikov. There's some talent there. So, you know, there isn't the talent, and I don't think there is the talent, to be a top 15 or even 20 power play. There's team, you know, they can't sustain this level of atrocious play. Because in the National Hockey League, if you're trying to make the playoffs or trying to at least be competitive, you can't score on less than 10% of your power play opportunities. It's just abysmal. And Peter DeBoer has to bear some responsibility for this as well. I mean, obviously the odds are stacked against them and their percentages are going to move up. But again, the scheme, guys.
And Richie, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that a lot of Florida's power play goals are coming from their defenseman, McCabe. They're not.
I'll have to check into that.
I think I read that. And
that's a bad team right there.
Well, I mean, they're still competitive.
Well, Dale Towns.
I mean, they're Florida is by no means, you know, way behind the playoff race right now, but they're not getting enough, you know, offense from their. I mean, wow. They missed a guy like Nathan Horton.
Tampa Bay worst goals against average at 3.45 per game.
Now, luckily for the Bolts, they have their ninth in the NHL in goals per game, and they're fourth in the power play. So, as we spoke about before, you know, a team like Montreal is terrific because they're pretty good in all areas, and maybe they're not great in one. Tampa is pretty good in scoring goals, not great in preventing goals, and that's why they're, you know, seventh in the Eastern Conference right now, tied with Atlanta. This is a team that, you know, as much as you talk about the 1-3-1 there in Tampa Bay, and it has been successful, although teams, according to Elliot Freeman, are adjusting because
that's
what they're doing.
That's the Guy Boucher scheme, the 1-3-1.
Yes, 1-3-1, and what they're doing is they're encouraging their players to curl back and gain speed through the neutral zone because a 1-3-1 sees the three guys standing across the red line. Basically, they're stationary. But the issue here, guys, is Dan Ellis and Mike Smith. And, you know, when you go into this, Steve Yzerman's made a lot of good moves. And the Dan Ellis one, he was trying to see, you know, Dan Ellis, he signed. He had Mike Smith. You go with the hot goalie. And Ellis's numbers over his career haven't been bad. But both goaltenders have been awful. And as much as you can scheme all you want, at the same time, if you don't get any kind of goaltending, it really hurts you.
And that's really, and it's interesting because Tampa Bay plays in Vancouver tonight. And, they're going to be facing off against Corey Schneider, who could very well be Tampa Bay's goalie of the future.
A lot of injuries for Vancouver in that game.
Yep.
Moving to Vancouver, Manny Malhotra, face-off percentage at 62.2% success rate.
Just around where he was last year, guys. And make no mistake about it, and we said this right after on July when we were on Kick. This guy was signed, forget his forechecking, forget his skating. I don't care about that stuff. I mean, that's all a bonus. This guy was signed for one reason only, and that was to win faceoffs. And
in the playoffs.
62.2%. He's set third in the league with guys who've taken a minimum, I think, 150 or 200 draws. First is David Steckel in Washington, and second is Jim Slater in Atlanta. Malhotra is third. He's adding a faceoff element to a Vancouver team that didn't have it before. And, well, Kessler's good, but Malhotra's even better.
Well, I tell you what, when you can gain possession on two-thirds of the faceoffs the guy is taking, it's a huge advantage. I mean, and people sort of, you know, it's an art to be a specialist in the faceoff draw, but it's an asset that every good team needs.
And it's absolutely important. I mean, like Richie mentioned earlier on in the show, you know, just for people who weren't listening earlier, me and Richie are coaching Bantam Hockey, and we started teaching, you know, kids how to properly take faceoffs. We have a couple guys on our team that are small, and Richie's done an excellent job of teaching these kids, and it's starting to pay off. You win draws.
Yep.
You possess the puck. Your team like Vancouver,
exactly.
You get the puck.
Yep. You get it to your talented players.
There's some guys on that team, Drew, that they don't. I mean, try to take the puck away from the Sedins. It's not very easy.
Great point, Ezzy. That's a great point. Quickly, last stat.
Last stat.
Sidney Crosby's current shooting percentage He's leading the league in goals, by the way, is 21.7%. His career shooting percentage is 15.4, so you expect it to drop a little bit. But last year he was at 17.1. And if there's anybody who you think would defy his previous statistics and get better, it may be Sidney Crosby. So there might be a drop, but maybe not as significant as something.
He won't be at 21%, but he could very well be a little bit above the 17%
from
last year.
I know this is Richie's new segment. Can I throw in one statistic? Or actually, I'm going to ask you guys a question here.
Quickly.
Who do you think is leading the New Jersey Devils in shots? Shots for?
I don't know. John McClain.
David Clarkson.
Wow.
77 shots on net going into yesterday's game.
Well, it's the stat you emailed out to us, Ezzy, that Crosby and Stamkos have 49 goals between the two of them.
47.
47, and the Devils have 50 goals altogether.
Not including yesterday. They have 52 now, but that just shows you how badly inept the Devils are. Yeah.
Let's leave it there. When we come back, we're going to do NHL news and notes. We still have Jeremy Rutherford, Craig Heisinger. You know, 2 hours left here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this morning. Lots still to come. Stay with us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
Insight, analysis, and opinions on all things hockey. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290.
Top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go, still to come. Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch next segment, and Craig Heisinger of the Manitoba Moose General Manager.
NHL News and Notes.
Time for NHL News and Notes. We're going to start in Chicago, where the injury bug has begun to bite the Blackhawks, and they've lost Patrick Kane out probably about 3 weeks with an ankle injury. Sustained earlier last week, and Marian Hossa was placed on the injured reserve retroactive to November 29th. He's out 2 to 3 weeks with what is described as a lower body ailment. Now, much has been made in the offseason about how the Blackhawks lost a lot of their depth, having to trade away a lot of their players due to their mismanagement of the salary cap, blah, blah, blah. Is this where we're going to see the lack of depth begin to bite the Chicago Blackhawks?
That's precisely it. Drew, when you don't have the third and fourth line guys who are capable of playing first and second line minutes, for example, Versteeg, for example, Bufflin, Ladd, all those guys who are proving this year, for the most part, that they can shoulder those minutes. Then what you're getting now is guys who are aren't as good as those players who are now playing top six roles, whether it be the Stahlbergs or Bickles or whoever it may be. Mm-hmm. You're putting guys into positions where ideally you'd want them to be slowly worked into the roster and then slowly moved up from fourth line to third line to second, second to first. Now, you're banking on Jonathan Toews, Patrick Sharp to really shoulder the load. You're banking on guys like David Bolin to take more of an offensive role, which he's capable of. But guys are now in roles where you don't want them. And this is not only is a lack of depth evident here, but I think what also happens is a guy like Marty Turco, who ideally would be sheltered from, 25, from 30 shots a game, and you'd be able to keep the guys to the outside. When you don't have the puck as much up front, obviously that means the puck's in your own zone more. And as good as their defense is, if their offensive guys can't put the puck in the net, the puck control gets into your zone. And if Marty Turco is getting shelled, he's not a goalie at this stage in his career, if he ever was, he's not a goalie who can take that responsibility and put up numbers similar to guys like Luongo and guys like Vokoun.
You mentioned Marty Turco. Let me just sort of a quick question as you mentioned his name. What do you think of the fact that he didn't play against Dallas earlier in the week? Corey Crawford
played very well in that
Corey
game.
Crawford started instead of Marty Turco. And the guys always want to play against their ex-team.
That's what the coaches are supposed to kind of put those guys in there. That says a lot about the confidence they have in Marty Turco, though.
It says, I mean, because you know that they wanted to play Turco. I mean, the coaches would have played Turco if they thought that he even gave them a chance to win the game. He's really struggling. I mean, he was struggling last year, and he's been struggling for his. It just seems like his skill set has diminished so quickly.
I think as much as we like to think that Drew, I'm not sure he was ever a great goalie. He had his time where he was successful behind a very good defensive team. And I think with Marty Turco's issue, for me, always was untimely goals, too. Always seemed to be letting in goals at bad times. Mm-hmm. But his numbers just across the board really aren't great. And so what happened is Niemi hasn't been great in San Jose either. So you were basically just taking the cheaper option of goalies you thought were very similar, which I think they still are. But the problem is that Niemi played with those numbers behind a far stronger team.
Right.
Less shots, not as many close games, up more. Now Chicago's not as deep. Don't have the puck, as I just said. So you're putting goalies in positions where it's 3-2, 2-1.
well, then the fact that you don't have a good goalie is really starting to show.
And guys, I think there's a few things here, and I think you're right. You know, in saying that Turco, you know, you can make a strong argument that he hasn't, you know, played as well. But I've always stuck up for Turco, and I'm gonna continue, just like I'm gonna stand by my
fool's gold.
Carey Price, Carey Price will be the most disappointing goalie of the season, even though that's obviously not happening. You make a prediction, you have to stick by it, whether you like it or not.
You can bail out on your prediction after 27 games.
Exactly, but I think Richie mentioned Taves, and I think he's a guy that's going to he has to step up. Sharp has been one of their most consistent. He's got 17 goals right now. Mm-hmm. But a guy like Taves really has to step it up, and we're going to see exactly what this team is made of. I mean, I realize that's the biggest cliche, but we really are. You got Marian Hossa out, Patrick Kane out. You already don't have a lot of depth. You have guys like Jack Skilly in the lineup, and he hasn't developed into a scorer like he was in junior.
In college.
But, I mean, they're 5 points behind Detroit right now, Drew. You start slipping a little bit. All of a sudden, Chicago starts getting into a position where they're, you know, in the bottom four. Then what do you do? If Turco's, you know, not playing well, does Crawford become your number one goalie?
I think Crawford is your number one goalie right now.
I think Crawford's taking that job.
He might have.
I don't know about that. You have to wait. He hasn't played enough games to say that.
Well, I'm beginning. Well, you know, let's pull up the numbers for Crawford. I think the numbers bear it out. I mean,
he has better numbers, but he hasn't started enough. Drew,
well, he started 12 games
last year to
Turco's 19.
To elaborate more on my point a little while back, Chicago this year 29.2 shots against per game. That's 10th in the league. It's not bad. You want to know what Chicago's shots against were last year?
I do.
25.1, best in the league.
Well, that's so they're four extra shots. So, you know, four extra shots, and are those shots being saved? Because probably, maybe...
Even
maybe
by the percentages, Drew, over the course of a season, four extra shots per game times 82 games.
That's a lot of rubber.
320 shots, and even you play the percentages, I mean, at whatever their save percentage is right now, it's not good.
Well, Crawford's at a 913 save percentage, Turco's at a 901 save percentage.
901's terrible in this day and age, Drew.
Yeah.
913 is very serviceable. It's fine.
It used to be that 900 was sort of the benchmark for a save percentage, sort of going back 10, 15 years ago. Now it's got to be 915, I think, at a minimum.
913 is fine with that team. 901 is if you're anywhere near 9, you're
he's almost at 3 goals against. He's 2.9 goals against per game, Turco is. Crawford's at 2.4, which isn't anything to write home about, but it's certainly better than 2.9.
Chicago's got enough offense where, well, again, you can, you know, this team... That's a lot more shots on goal against. Again, they're not terrible, but last year they were exceptional.
Well, they had exceptional depth last year, which is
Brent Sopel used to put those big shin pads in the shooting lanes. No, I'm just kidding.
Don't mention Brent Sopel.
As mullet.
Alex Hemsky and Sean Horkoff both suffered injuries for the Oilers. Hemsky's out 1 month with a groin injury. Horkoff's out 8 weeks with an MCL sprain. You know, just another team that obviously has no depth and can't handle injuries at any point in time. But you know, for the Oilers, it's not as big of a deal because I think it was a lost year anyways.
I just want to say one thing here. With those guys out now, the average age of the Edmonton Oilers forward core is 20.1 or something. I mean, it's ridiculous. Yeah. They call Linus Omark up. Is Dustin Penner the oldest guy on that on that team right now, 28 years old? Like, it's ridiculous.
He's wearing an A now.
Sam Gagner is 21 years old, and he's the old guy on that line with Jordan Eberle and Taylor Hall. It's ridiculous, but Hemsky's their best overall player. I mean, you know, Taylor Hall is too young to be considered their best player right now, even though skill-wise he is. But Horkoff is their leader. They obviously got to overtime against the Ducks and lost, and I mean, they're doing all right. They've gone on a nice run here, but no, they
got bombed in the third period yesterday. Yeah. They got lucky because Happy Boulin's back, and he played really well. Right. The Oilers are exactly, Drew.
I think Steve McIntyre is the oldest player. He's 30.
Yeah, it's a loss. The Oilers are a lost cause this year, and all they want is a high draft pick, and you want to see their young players play. You're going to get to see both. Horkoff certainly helps in terms of his defensive prowess, his ability to play, you know, both ways. He can mentor the young guys. Hemsky, I think they should trade Hemsky eventually, but so I think that his injury probably... You're hoping it doesn't hurt his value in terms of the trade market because Edmonton's not going anywhere soon. And Horkoff's contract's probably untradeable. But overall, if you're Edmonton, you want a high draft pick. Ideally, you probably want to take a defenseman. And you want to just see the young players play, so who really cares?
Fair enough. Bill Guerin retired. 1,263 games played in the NHL, 429 goals, 427 assists for a total of 856 points. Two-time Stanley Cup winner with New Jersey and Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. I'm a little surprised he was retired. I thought this was a guy who, you know, later on in the year, stretch drive into the playoffs, could have helped a team like Pittsburgh. Is this a fact? Is he retiring because he didn't want to sign for, you know, $850,000?
No. I think he retired because he wanted to be signed at this point.
I agree with that.
And I think, Drew, in my opinion, when he didn't catch on with Philly, that was the one team, aside from Pittsburgh, because Guerin wanted to stay with Pittsburgh. He made it very clear that he wanted to stay with Pittsburgh. Loved playing in Pittsburgh.
Don't you think he could still contribute to Pittsburgh?
Of course, but they've made it clear that they're not going to sign him right now, so he doesn't want to wait around.
If they came calling at the trade deadline or late in the year, right before rosters froze, and said, we want you on this team, on this roster for the playoff stretch drive, does he return that call?
Hey, Guerin can always unretire, right? Just like you can unfriend someone.
Really, I don't think he does. I think that he wanted to catch on now, and I think he's done.
Really? I think that's a shame, because I think this is a guy who could still contribute.
Yeah, maybe, Drew. Maybe on the power
50 points
power
last year. He's definitely could contribute. Yeah. 45 or 50
let's
points.
Let's not ignore the other retirement this week.
Yuri Lehtinen?
Yeah.
Yuri Lehtinen, 875 games played, 243 goals, 271 assists, 514 points. Won a cup with Dallas, but more so than his points was the defensive game that he provided.
He became the shotgun. You know, he played shotgun with Mike Modano all those years. Was a very, very solid defensive player. Had some good hands, not great hands.
Good offensive player too, Drew.
Yeah, very good awareness. He was a very smart player, guys. Wasn't the biggest guy, but always positionally sound. Had good body control. Was just one of those really, really solid NHL players where you might not hear about him 10 years down the road, but guys who saw him play will have appreciated what he brought to the game.
Richie, I just want to say two things. First off, they did give him a little bit of a send-off last night, right?
In Dallas?
He was at the game?
Oh, he might have been.
I know he was at the game, but I wasn't sure. I didn't see if he was at... Tim's giving me the...
Producer Tim's giving us the nod.
I saw that. I know they won in a shootout against Carolina, but I was thinking about this, too. I think obviously when these guys retire, these are very good hockey players. These are some of the greatest hockey players to ever play. I think Guerin... Basically what I'm getting at is the Hall of Fame chatter. I think Guerin doesn't get in.
Neither of them get in. What do you mean?
I think Lehtinen should be considered.
All right. Well, you need to leave the show.
Yeah. And on that note, we're going to take away
Three
as a
Selkies?
Grudge from him.
Three Selke trophies.
Do you want me to go on a quick tangent?
Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect for Yuri Lehtinen, but I have a big issue with Selke awards going to wingers.
Can you tell us why?
Because it's a lot easier to play defense as a winger than it is as a center.
Okay, well that explains that. But I mean, neither of those guys are Hall of Famers, and Ezra,
Richie knows he's played wing and
Ezra,
center.
we're gonna have to test your coffee to make sure it's just coffee and not some sort of dark.
There's Baileys
alcohol.
Baileys.
Are you sure it's just not all Baileys after that comment?
It's half Baileys on the top and then coffee on the bottom.
Jeremy Rutherford
of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch coming
up.
Hey
now.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 20. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 10:15 in the morning here on Sports Radio 1290.
Central time. Hey now.
Cut his mic.
Got his coffee.
We're pleased to be joined now by Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Jeremy, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, thanks, guys. I'm sorry I missed a connection with you a month or so ago. Good to talk to you.
Likewise, Jeremy. Jeremy, you wrote an article on Tuesday about how Blues general manager Doug Armstrong is trying to acquire a scoring forward. Any progress on that front?
I don't think so. I know that he's been out and about, and they're open to... explore and check all their options. But I just don't know what's available that can come in and help this Blues team right now. And with the number of guys they have out, TJ Oshie, David Perron, Andy McDonald, I don't know that one guy can come in and help. They're missing a lot of their offense right now. And to me, the situation the Blues are in after the fantastic start and then kind of a tough 12-game stretch for them that wasn't so good, to me it's starting to look like the 2008 09 season when they lost Paul Kariya and E.J. Oshie and I believe Andy McDonald for a little stretch and these guys, kind of these third and fourth line grinders just kind of banded together and that's what the Blues are doing right now. So in terms of are they going to be able to go out and get somebody, I don't know that there's a guy out there who can come in and really bolster this situation.
Jeremy, can we get a up-to-the-minute injury update on TJ Oshie, who's got a fractured ankle, David Perron, who's having concussion, post-concussion issues, Andy McDonald as well? Sorry.
The Joe Thornton hit on David Perron was back on November 4th,
right.
And I talked to David about a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks ago, and he said he was feeling a lot better, and was hoping to get back on the ice soon. And for whatever reason, there's been a setback since. His symptoms still aren't going away, and he's not even back on the ice yet. So he's into, I believe, you know, game 20, 21 now that he's missed. TJ Oshie, his recovery is speeding up, although he's not going to be available for a while. That injury happened back on November 10th in Columbus. He has a fractured left ankle, and he's looking at being reevaluated not until February, so still a while on him. And then Andy McDonald, kind of a freak accident the other night, catching a rut, sliding into the knee of Sean Horkoff, and he, Andy McDonald, who's had a number of concussions in his career, his days with Anaheim, has another concussion, and he's going to be out indefinitely.
But yeah, there's certainly been a lack of luck in Blues land this year. Jeremy, that you know, on a positive note, this team is has allowed the least amount of shots on goal per game. Can you talk a little bit about why that is? Is that a product of the system? Is that a tribute to the forwards playing defensively? Is that a tribute to the to the defenseman? Who's most responsible for that feat so far?
Well, I think it's the system, number one. The Blues knew, even with T.J. Oshie and McDonald, they didn't plan to score a lot of goals. They haven't been one of the top leading goal-scoring teams in the past few years. And with getting Yaroslav Halak in the offseason, they knew that they could be a defensive-minded team if Flores came back and helped. The question mark I think people had with that philosophy was you had Alex Pietrangelo, who was going to play his first full season, and Ian Cole, who might get some time. He's a rookie. You had Tyson Strachan back there, Nikita Nikitin, a Russian who's playing his first year. And would that style work, playing low-scoring games? And for the first 12 games, it worked. They only allowed 17 goals against in the first 12 games, but then I believe they allowed 50-some-odd goals in the second 12 games. So it's been a bit up and down. But the defense has played well the past couple of games, and that really has to be their staple, especially now with those offensive guys out.
We're joined by Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Now, Jeremy, where is SCP Worldwide in their search for a new investor for the Blues?
Yeah, they're looking for a majority investor. When they bought the team back in 06, a group named Towerbrook paid 75% of the cost, and that's a group that had a limited horizon, probably 4 or 5 years. They wanted to stay in and then cash out. That 5 years expired. Towerbrook told Dave that, hey, we want to divest. So Dave Jeckets and his group, SCP Worldwide, is looking for that majority investor. And from what I'm told, there's been a lot of interest of late. And Dave Jeckets kind of set a self-imposed date of the end of the calendar year, December 31st, as a deadline to find that group. And recently at the Board of Governors meeting, Dave Jeckets told reporters it looks like it's going to be early in the new year. So I think it'll get done. I think the Blues are in good shape in St. Louis, but it looks like it's going to take a little more time to seal that deal.
Blues head coach Davis Payne was really happy with the way his fourth line played in the Blues' last game. The Blues won 4-1 against Columbus. Is there a stranger fourth line in the league than Dave Scatcherd, Cam Janssen, and Stéphane Delarivière?
There cannot be. There's no way there's a stranger line than this one. You're talking about a team who, when they had the offensive players in the lineup, you had a lineup of Vladimir Sobotka, center in that fourth line, with Brad Winchester, who's actually played well lately, and then Matt D'Agostini, who's got a little offense to him on that fourth line. Because of the injuries, the lines are completely jumbled, and now you bring up a journeyman guy like Dave Scatcherd, who spent the early part of the season in the AHL, center in that line, and then Cam Janssen, who's had a tough time the past couple of years getting into the lineup. Now he seems to be a regular at the right wing. And then Stéphane Delarivière is a guy who the Blues got in the trade from Washington for DJ King, and it looks like he'd get his feet wet in the American this year. But now he's a regular on that fourth line. But they played well the other night, and like I said before, this team has to have that.
DJ King leads well, I guess, well into our next question, Jeremy. He, of the many penalty minutes, yet the Blues are leading the entire NHL in penalty minutes this year. You know, some of that's attributable to, obviously, to the...
Cam Janssen.
Yeah, the fighting majors, but they've also taken a fair amount of minor penalties. Is Davis Payne grown tired of the high penalty minute total so far there?
Well, I asked him about that, and, I'm not trying to stick up for the team whatsoever, but I did a little research on that, and they had a couple games where they had 60, 70 penalty minutes. That kind of skews that a little bit. I've seen some undisciplined hockey teams here in St. Louis, and this doesn't seem like one of them. I mean, they get their fair share of penalty minutes. I think they're averaging 18 or 19 a game. That's what it was a few games ago. But from watching the games night in and night out, they don't appear undisciplined. And Davis Payne said, he feels that way. He doesn't feel it's a problem. But, yeah, when you look at the stat sheet and see that, it's a little alarming.
Two quick questions we wanted to ask you about a couple weeks ago. First, David Backus's contract extension. Reading prior to the signing, and I felt the same way as you did, that I didn't think he'd get as much money, 4.5 cap hit a year, as he ended up getting. Why do you think they, went over that $4 million mark? And do you think that, he can earn that money with the fact, considering the fact that he's probably not more than a 20 to 25 goal scorer?
Right. He had the breakout season a couple of years ago with 31 goals, and everybody thought, wow, he could be a 25, 30-goal guy in the league. And I think that may have hurt him scoring that many goals because that's what people look at him as. But last year he fell back to 17, and this year he's putting up a lot of assists but not many goals. And I think the reason Dave Backus got more than $4 million, which is the number I kind of thought, $4 million, he got 4-5, is because of what he brings night in and night out. He's one of the team's leading hitters. Yep. He's an assistant captain now, and I think he's going to be the future captain of this team. He's really a rugged guy, and he speaks well, and he holds his teammates accountable. So, being around him and what his teammates, how they respect him, I think adds to his paycheck a little bit. And the other thing, you're looking 5 years down the road. I think with the way David Backus plays and what he could mean to this team for the future, year three, year four, year five, that 4.5 might look like a bargain. But, I don't know that this year or next year he's a $4.5 million guy, but I think he definitely will be.
It may be. One other guy of interest to me, Jeremy, is 2 years ago I really, really, really liked his game, Patrick Berglund. Last year he had a bit of a struggle, and even this year there's been some ups and some downs. Why hasn't he progressed maybe as some, including myself, thought he would?
It's probably one of the biggest questions on the Blues roster right now. He had the 21 goals as a rookie. I think he finished a point better than Stamkos that year, if I'm not mistaken. And last year took a big step back, and he missed a practice. He overslept and kind of found himself in the doghouse a little bit. And he spent a majority of his time this summer in St. Louis, not going back to Sweden very long, and trained and came back and was really excited about getting the season going. And it's been a bit up and down again. So I know the Blues scratch their heads with why he hasn't progressed as much. They've assigned assistant coach Scott Mellenby, who obviously he's performed every role in the NHL. They've assigned him to Patrick Berglund and said, hey, see what you can do. And we saw a stretch where he had improved his game after talking to Scott, but it's still not consistent enough. And maybe part of it has to do with the guys he's playing with. Right now he's on a line with Brad Winchester and DJ Crombie, and so it's a product of the situation the Blues are in. But, looking back to when the guys had those guys, Perron, O'Shea, and McDonald, he really wasn't, progressing at the rate you'd like to see. So a bit of a head scratcher, but a former first-round pick.
Sure,
I still think the potential is there.
Jeremy, we'll leave you with this question about another former first-round pick. That's defenseman Eric Johnson, first overall in 2006. Is he ever going? I mean, he had his injury, the freak injury problems he had, early in his career. Is he ever going to really fulfill the talent that he has, that the Blues thought of him
when
he was
second power play unit this year for a while?
Yeah, when he was drafted first overall.
Well, you guys are asking the top one and the top two questions that all fans are asking here in St. Louis. Yeah, that's definitely been a topic of discussion. Although the past five or six games, I think he has 5 points after just getting 5 points in the first 20 or so.
Yeah.
So his offense is picking up. Last year he had 39 points, kind of a breakout season offensively for him. But, yeah, the questions are there. He's a number one overall pick. And the way the Blues presented it when they drafted him is they said, everybody, be patient with this guy. It's hard for a 20, 21-year-old guy to break into the league as a defenseman. You guys remember firsthand what it took for Chris Pronger to turn into who he was. But I think that people expect more of Eric Johnson at this point. Yeah, he missed the one season with the knee injury, but now he's back. This is his second season back since then, and they want to see that progression. He is going up against the other team's best players. The Blues are without one of their shutdown defensemen, too, Roman Polak. That's another big injury. So Eric Johnson has a tough assignment, but I think defensively his play could be better in his own zone. And up until recently, he hadn't produced the point. So when you see Jonathan Toews pick behind him, do what he's done already in his career, it makes you wonder, did the Blues make the right pick?
Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, good to talk to you guys.
Take care, Jeremy. Thanks very much.
That was Jeremy Rutherford, of course. You know, glad to have Jeremy on. We had that hiccup the first time, but we're glad always to get him on. Good guy, always good insight into what's happening in St. Louis.
Drew, I just wanted to quickly say, you know, as far as Eric Johnson goes, he's still 22 years old.
I know, he's young.
You know, you asked the question, is Sidney Crosby in his prime, which a lot of people have been asking. I think when you're talking about defensive prime, then you're getting 26 to 30.
Longer. Yes, you are. And he's got having... You know, let's note the fact that knee injury was a freak knee injury, but he was, you know, the rumors are that he was horsing around when they were having some fun on the golf cart. And
he's 21 years old or 20 years old. You expect to horse around on a golf cart. You never expect to shatter your knee.
You can horse around, but you don't want to get injured.
Of course not, but he never did it on purpose.
Yeah. But it wasn't a hockey-related injury. What I'm saying is he wasted a year of his development because he was stupid.
Yeah, I know. He's under contract for the next 2 years, so the Blues have a couple years.
Well, they did one of those low sign, you know, those contracts where they signed him, thinking he'd get to a point in 3 years where he was, you know, worth his value.
That's right.
That last year he'd be exceeding his value. You know, 2.6 cap, it's pretty reasonable. The problem is right now is he hasn't produced offensively, and so while he can skate and he's big and he's strong, he can do a lot of things, his lack of offensive production is currently hurting his value to the Blues, especially considering this team can't score.
But the potential's there. 2007-2008, 69 games played, 33 points.
True. Unquestionably, the talent is there with Eric Johnson, but look at it this year, for example, and this is not what 1 year does not a career make. But let's look at it in a vacuum here for a second. This team has all these injuries up front. Brad Boys can't score. You got Perron out. You know, Andy McDonald's now out. TJ Oshie's now out. You need a little bit of offense from the back end. That happens when you have injured players, and Eric Johnson has produced poor numbers so far.
They expected more of him.
I hear what you're saying, Richie, but why would you ever want to look at something in a vacuum? That doesn't make any sense.
Let's leave it there. When we come back, we're going to discuss the Coyotes lease agreement. We're going to talk about the invasion of the Islander, the Nordique fans in Long Island tonight.
Nordique Nation.
Nordique Nation is invading Long Island. It sounds like a wrestling thing, but whatever. And I'm telling you, folks, if you haven't read the Coyotes lease agreement, just sit back. You're going to laugh and laugh. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.